Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook/ IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter at IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPokulski.com.
All right, what's up, ladies and gents? Ben Pokulski here with John Meadows, the Muscle Expert Podcast number 3. We've got an amazing, incredible guest for you guys today. I'm really, really honored to get Dr. Wilson on the line today. A lot of you know that I get to work with Dr. Wilson a lot, and I've got more respect for him than anyone in the industry. The guy's literally an encyclopedia, and not only is he probably, you know, one of the most well-read guys in the world, he's also in the trenches hammering out every day, working harder than literally 99% of the human beings I've ever met. You know, 2 and 3 workouts a day, getting ridiculous numbers on his squats and his deadlifts and his benches. Doc, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Ben. I'm excited to be here on a really cool topic.
Yeah, it should be a great topic. It's certainly one that's a little controversial and a lot of times misinformed. John, what's going down?
Hey, everything's going really well, Ben. It's the time of year that we get ready to bring in a lot of people down here in Columbus, and we do this Learn to Train seminar with Dave Tate. Dave has told me to tell you especially that he's really looking forward to meeting you and us training together. So big week here. Good things going on.
Why don't we give a little plug for that, man? I think not that they need to increase the numbers, but I mean, I didn't know about it until today. I'd love to hear more about it and give the listeners a little insight. It's exactly the awesome things you guys do down there.
Yeah, so for the listeners, this is a really cool event. Dave started doing these, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago, and there's a day devoted to lecture, and, you know, they bring in folks that are very well educated. You know, somebody like Dr. Wilson actually would be a great lecturer. And then we also have a day, actually we have 2 days of hands-on training. Some days we do 1 day on the seminar, some days it's 2, but it's hands-on training. You actually bring your workout gear. You actually train at the Elite FTS compound. And it's pretty intense, man. The cameras are rolling and you're being coached by guys like Ed Cohen and Steve Goggins. I mean, these are the top guys in really powerlifting history. And another really, really cool thing about it is Dave donates the proceeds to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And, when we kick off these things, he has a slideshow and he shows the kids that have been impacted directly that have had a wish granted to them from the donations. And Dave tracks this and he tells everybody, you know, this is so-and-so and this is what they got to do. So it's just a really, really cool thing, you know, and in bodybuilding and powerlifting, you know, I think we're called, you know, meatheads and other things, but there's some really good people in both sports. And Dave is a really good, straightforward guy that also believes in giving back. And so this is one way for him to give back, and it's also just one heck of an opportunity for people to come and learn from the best, hear lectures from the best in the field. Just an all-around excellent event.
That sounds phenomenal.
Right? I'm excited to go next time. I'm the first guy to sign up, man. You guys let me know, and I'll be there. That sounds, really, really amazing. Just to jump right into the topic here, I'm not going to give you an update with me because my life is boring. I'm basically, you know, invested in training as often as I can for the Arnold and getting my new program out in my 40 that should be out in hopefully in the next 2 weeks. So we're going to jump right into the topic of the day, which is Dr. Wilson is an expert on many things. One of the things he's been researching recently is breakfast, the optimal things to eat for breakfast to optimize performance, to optimize fat burning, whether or not you should eat breakfast. So we're going to dive right into that. Doc, tell us a little bit about the research you did, and maybe why don't you tell us what you ate for breakfast this morning?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, I'll be honest with you. If you look at, you know, people in America, there's a lot of people who actually skip breakfast. And a number of the reasons for that is because, well, you know, hey, if I skip breakfast and I'm dieting, well, maybe I won't take in as many calories or, you know, oh, I'm just not hungry in the morning, so I'm going to skip breakfast. So first thing I want to talk about is the importance of breakfast. and looking at what happens if you skip breakfast. And basically, studies show, they're real clear, people who skip breakfast are actually hungrier the rest of the day, and their total calorie intake is actually higher, one. And two, they actually end up having more body fat than people who don't skip breakfast. So the first take-home message is, look, everyone out there, breakfast is a real important meal. You don't want to mess with it. You don't want to skip it. So as far as what I had for breakfast this morning, I had a exactly right. I went to Dunkin' Donuts. I had a coffee, some donuts. I ended up having an omelet, with cheese and spinach, and some mushrooms and some feta, and so it was actually fairly high fat breakfast, and a lot of high quality protein.
What do you cook your omelet in, Doc? Is there any particular fat you choose to cook your omelet in? People ask me that question all the time.
Yeah, typically I'll use olive oil or something like that for the pan, or canola oil, and some people use cook with MCTs depending, because it gives you such quick energy.
Yep.
So medium chain triglycerides. I know Ben used a lot of medium chain triglycerides.
I use a ton of coconut oil and MCTs. Yeah, I love it.
Okay. Yeah. So, and the thing about medium chain triglycerides are so great is that most fat, when you take it in, it actually has to get transported into what are known as mitochondria. And mitochondria basically are fat burning furnaces. So fat's got to get into the mitochondria to be burned. And it needs a transporter to get in there. But medium-chain triglycerides don't. So they automatically, because they're smaller, they're shorter in length, they automatically just diffuse or move into the mitochondria, and they can get used as energy. So they give you energy a lot quicker. So especially with breakfast, when you wake up in the morning, that's coconut oil ends up being a really, really good source of fat that you can have. And I know, of course, a lot of people got to be thinking right now, wait a second, high fat? You know, I thought high fat was bad, right? So what did you have for breakfast then?
Let's ask John. I'll ask John. I'm curious because he's never actually told me this. What does the Mountain Dog eat for breakfast, John?
Well, basically, if you just rewind what Dr. Wilson said, that's pretty much me. what I typically like to have is eggs cooked in low heat, in coconut oil, and actually, I swear I was smiling because I like spinach and cheese myself too, Dr. Wilson.
That's awesome.
You know, and I don't know if you know Dr. Serrano. He's a mentor of mine. He's a really good friend as well, and he would probably say the exact same thing that Dr. Wilson is saying. He's big on that as well. Sometimes if I'm not really hungry, I'll just have some good old-fashioned flavored casein hydrolysate, a really, really, really broken down version, not the cheaper stuff, but something that's, you know, a very large percentage of diet tripeptides. But if I'm going to eat, though, I agree, Dr. Wilson, I really love some good eggs that we get from the farm. The yolks are, like, literally orange from all the carotenes in it. And, you know, can't beat it.
That's awesome.
Yes, myself is very simple, very similar actually. Well, different, but obviously a similar approach. I like to take in between 6 and 8 ounces of ground beef because it's you know very easy to cook up for me as opposed to eating any type of you know substantial meat source. 6 to 8 ounces, and I'll have 3 to 4 whole eggs. I'll have spinach and broccoli mixed in, and I kind of make it into like almost a scramble. Cooked in coconut oil, and you know, I use usually quite a bit of spinach or broccoli, and like always high fat and no carb. So similar to what you guys are doing, I've been doing that now for about 2 years, and I mean the difference is just massive. And I made a comment on my Facebook the other day, and people jumped down my throat. It was the idea that if you learn how to time nutrients and you really learn how much food you can really eat. I mean, I have so many clients that come to me and say, you know, I eat like 100 grams of carbs a day and I get fat. And, you know, it's just because you're eating it at the wrong time. So kind of similar to what we're saying here is, you know, timing your nutrients properly and what.
Exactly.
So, Doc, why is it so important?
So why is it so important?
Yeah, so why is it important?
First of all, like, there's a really sort of breakthrough study by VanderWaal. It was in 2008. And what VanderWaal found was basically, you know, typically Americans will wake up like, oh, you know, that's when I need the most energy, so I'm going to have a bagel and cream cheese and orange juice, right? So basically he compared that typical American diet where you had the bagel, and he compared it to exactly what all of us just talked about eating, an egg breakfast. And he did this for several weeks, and he noticed that, one, the rest of the day the people who had the egg breakfast were actually fuller, so they were more satiated. And the cool thing is that they lost actually three times the amount of fat as the people who had the high bagel breakfast. So this led us
So what's the reason behind that? In your eyes, I mean, the scientific logic behind that would be what?
Well, here's the scientific logic behind it is this. When we wake up in the morning, there's a concept known as nutrient programming. And when we wake up in the morning, essentially, what we eat will program our metabolism on what fuel source to use the rest of the day. So if you wake up and you have a bagel and orange juice and some cream cheese, you'll actually program your body to use carbohydrates the remainder of the day and not rely on fat. Whereas if you have fat for breakfast and obviously a good amount of protein, the rest of the day, your preferred fuel source is actually going to end up being fat. So it's called nutrient programming, and there's a lot of studies coming out supporting this. So I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, you know, so I've heard the same thing, and I think I heard it, I want to say it was called metabolic flexibility, Dr. Wilson, but...
That's exactly it, yeah, metabolic flexibility.
Yeah, so one of my buddies, Bill Wilson, Bill Willis has done a ton of work on this. I used to be one of those guys that, and I'd like your thoughts on this, I used to be one of those guys years back that thought, well, if you wake up in the morning, you just fasted and you're real insulin sensitive, so it would stand to reason you would just jam a bunch of carbs with your protein in the mornings. But what I found over the years is, and I want to explain some of my reasoning behind it. I want you to tell me if I'm full of crap or if there's some validity to it. But what I found over the years was that a lower carb breakfast made it much, much, much easier to stay lean, much, much easier. And part of my thinking was this metabolic flexibility that you're talking about. And the other thing that I always thought about was if you're insulin sensitive, at that point in time, since you're not training, this goes back to what Ben's saying with nutrient timing and the environment that your body's in at the time. So if you're not training or doing anything, your fat cells are also sensitive. So, you know, I guess in my mind, I thought, you know, if you eat a bunch of glucose, you can jam them into fat cells just as much as you can muscle cells because you haven't done any training or anything that would preferentially push glucose into a muscle cell. So, you know, I kind of thought of it that way, and then also in terms of what you described with metabolic flexibility, and that was, I guess, my reasoning for keeping carbs low at breakfast. So I just wondered what your thoughts were on that.
I think that's exactly right. So what most people don't realize is, like, first off, we talk about insulin sensitivity. It basically means that, you know, like when someone eats carbs, if they're really insulin sensitive, they don't need to release a lot of insulin to store the carbs. And so most scientists will just look at, okay, well, how much insulin gets released when you consume carbs? If it's a low amount and you're able to store carbs well, you're highly insulin sensitive. But what they don't tell you is what John just said, is that you are insulin sensitive in both fat and in muscle. And so it's absolutely right. If you wake up and you have not trained your muscles, then you're actually there's no impetus, there's no stimulus for them to go, oh, I'm going to take up a bunch of carbs. The other thing I've heard a lot of people say is, oh, you know what? I wake up in the morning, my muscles are depleted of carbohydrates. That's not true. If you don't train your – unless you wake up in the middle of the night and train, your carbohydrate stores in your muscles are pretty much intact. It's your liver that's that carbohydrate stores that are lowering, but it's the muscle, especially with heavy weightlifting, that you're actually relying on for carbohydrates. So I hadn't heard it put in that perspective, John, but it's a really good point.
Doc, one question for you then. I mean, I get this question a lot too, is the effect of cortisol then. Obviously, your cortisol levels are known to be highest in the morning. People suggest carbohydrates blunt cortisol. So what would be your argument there?
That's a really, really good question. Again, one of the things is a lot of times people think, oh, you know, cortisol is evil, you know, and things of that nature. But I think in general, a high energy breakfast is going to blunt the cortisol response overall, you know? And the other thing is, what most people should realize is that fat itself will spare muscle. So it's energy itself will spare muscle, both carbs and fats. So if you were to just, for example, have some people might listen and go, oh, I'm going to lower my carbs for breakfast. To say normally someone has whey protein for breakfast or egg whites for breakfast and cereal, they might listen in and say, oh, you know what? I'm just going to have the whey protein shake or just the egg whites. Well, the problem with that is, yes, cortisol is high at that point, and you will break down, especially those faster digesting proteins, and convert them into carbohydrate. And actually, I know, Ben, this is something that you've talked about in the past.
Yeah.
But in the presence of fat, fat's going to have a muscle sparing effect. And so it will actually act in a sense like the carbohydrates, like the energy, and spare your muscle.
Yeah, I mean, for most people, getting into the details, you know, the finer details of that, like, oh, don't have whey protein, and, you know, you should not have insulinogenic carbs, and I think it's too complicated. Just telling them, like you say, to have a high-protein, high-fat breakfast and avoid high glycemic carbs or most carbs in general, at least for that time, it's probably the best advice. I mean, getting into the, you know, the specific physiology of don't have this versus have that, and I think it's probably too complicated for maybe for people like John and I who are really trying to get to the top of the sport. That, I mean, that's where the application lies. But beyond that, you know, I think it's just comes down to, you know, you should probably try to avoid carbohydrates you know, for at least the first few couple hours in the day. John, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree. And like I said, I didn't always think that, you know, three or four years ago, I wasn't out of that mindset, but that's the beauty of people like Dr. Wilson that's doing the research is they can help steer us in the right direction. And I love it when I get educated and something I was doing wasn't the best. It wasn't optimal because if I learn a better way to do things, then I'm going to be better in the long run.
You just got better.
Yeah, you know, so and that was one of the things I noticed over the last couple of years with people. It's like, you know why this high carb breakfast just doesn't make sense. When I do it the opposite way, people look a lot better, they feel a lot better. I mean, most people actually feel a lot better.
Yep.
So, you know, a lot of these things, they're kind of intuitive if you're really, really, really in tune with your body, But we're not all that intuitive with our bodies. So
they're intuitive to you and me, John, and to Dr. Wilson. They're intuitive, but to the average person, they don't even think that far, you know, far ahead. You know, they're not that, like you said, they're not that well in tune with their body. I mean, I've been doing it for about the same time as you, like maybe 2 years or so, and then, you know, I think I told you this on a previous podcast. I was doing a seminar in Australia, and I was telling people what I was doing as far as my diet, and they go, "Oh, that's carb backloading." I go, "What the hell is carb backloading?" "Well, this is what you do." And I went, no, I've never heard. This is just, you know, this is something I discovered myself. And like, oh, no. And this guy, John Kiefer, already put it out in this book called Carb Backloading. So obviously that night I had to go home and download the book and, you know, dive into it and see what he was putting out. And obviously what I was doing was a little different. But, you know, on the whole, it was kind of built on the same premise.
So, guys, can you talk to that, like John and Ben, like, well, you're saying basically that you're going to get your carbohydrates still in the day, but it's later on in the day, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
this to me brings up, and obviously one of the things is I always research, like the, I end up researching a lot of the controversial topics, so we might as well bring up some controversial issues.
Sure.
And the controversial issue is if it hits your macros. So
right.
basically, you know, if it hits your macros, it says, okay, well, here's how many carbs you need, here's how many fats you need, here's how many proteins you need. It doesn't matter when you get them, right? So going to this topic here, and you guys are talking about, okay, well, you have low carb for breakfast, you have your carbs later in the day. This is kind of going against if it hits your macros. Well, is that supported by research? Well, there was a study in 2010 by at a Molly Bray's lab. And what they did was they had the low-carb breakfast and the other group had the higher-carb breakfast. Now, the low-carb breakfast group, the rest of the day had higher carbs. And the high-carb breakfast group, the rest of the day had lower carbs. At the end of the day, there was no difference in carbs, fats, or proteins. So both groups just hit their macros. But the rest of the day, the group that had the low-carb, high-fat breakfast were more, like John points out, metabolically flexible, meaning the rest of the day, they were more insulin sensitive, and they were able to use more fat than the other group. And over several weeks' time, they had lower body fat. Now, both groups, I would emphasize again, there were no difference on their macronutrients. So this points out that how we time our nutrients does seem to be an important variable.
Yeah, I think it makes a massive difference. Doc, can you quickly just define metabolic inflexibility so everybody has an idea what that means exactly?
Absolutely. So basically, metabolic flexibility means that our bodies can respond to various nutritional challenges. Okay, so let's just say that you were to consume a really high carbohydrate meal. You would want, that's a carbohydrate challenge. You would want your body to take those carbohydrates in, store them in the muscle, and use them. Okay, but if you're fasting and you wake up in the morning, you have low amount of carbs, you would want your body to preferentially use a lot of fat and a low amount of carbs so that you spare your carbohydrates. Now, so it's basically you're able to use whatever fuel is dictated by the nutritional challenge. If it's fasting, you use more fat, or if you have a high-fat, low-carb meal, you use more fat, or if it's a high-carb meal, you're using more carbs. Well, people who are insulin-resistant and on their way to, like, being type 2 diabetics are what we call metabolically inflexible. And what this means is that they basically never respond to the meal itself. So if you end up having a low-carb meal, you would want to use more fat. They don't use more fat. They're metabolically inflexible. So let's take an example. If you have a high-carb breakfast, you become metabolically inflexible. Your metabolism becomes fixed to use carbs. So after you have the high-carb breakfast, later in the day, if you lower your carbohydrates, like most people will do, like they have high-carb breakfast and they stay their carbs,
yep.
What happens is when they have the lower-carb meals, their metabolism is fixed to use carbs, and they're not flexible to be able to use fats in that low-carb meal. So they are metabolically inflexible. They can no longer respond to different meal patterns, whereas when you have the high-fat breakfast, you're very flexible. If you have high carbs, you can take them in and use them. If you have low carbs, you can use those. It's a really fascinating topic.
That's brilliant. Now, so kind of to dive just a little further into that, is it the same thing? Let's say, for example, if I didn't eat carbs for the first three meals of the day, would that maintain my metabolic flexibility for a longer period? Or does that metabolic inflexibility kind of stop as soon as I first take in carbs, or like how is that really regulated, I guess?
That's a really good question. Basically, if you look at the studies from like Molly Bray's lab, you maintain your metabolic flexibility the rest of the day if you go low carb the first couple hours.
Yep. Wow, brilliant.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's phenomenal. It really is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool that, you know, you guys are doing this or elite athletes and the sport, because It really is. It's really advanced, and I feel like it's pushing us forward. You know, and I think it's honestly a shock to a lot of people, this topic. The fact that how you time your nutrients actually does matter, and the backward sort of nature of like, I'm not supposed to carb up for breakfast. It's really, really cool, and I think it has a lot of applications.
You know, one of the things I think, Dr. Wilson, where we've went, when I say we, I mean anybody who's trying to gain a lot of muscle and lose fat, is it seems like it's been done backwards. And what I mean, and what you just said kind of, it adds credibility to that. And what I mean by that is people will try to eat less carbs around their workouts, and their assumption is I'm going to burn a lot of fat while I train. My philosophy has been the complete opposite. And when I think about weight training, and I think, why am I in the gym? I'm here to build muscle. Okay, what's going to allow me to build muscle? And I think that's where you have a tremendous opportunity by using carbohydrates and nutrients timed correctly to build muscle. And if you've done the things that we've covered on the show so far early in the day, you've also set the stage for the right fat burning. And it's just crazy to me because I hear people all the time, well, John, if I follow this protocol of yours, I'm not going to burn any fat while I'm training. I don't care. I want you to build muscle while you're training.
Exactly.
I don't want you to have no food in you. And then 30 minutes into my, you know, I have very difficult, challenging workouts for folks. I don't want you to crash, you know, to not be able to train. How are you going to build muscle at the fastest rate possible if you don't have fuel in you? And then when you have all this, you know, all these cool things going on with, you know, GLUT4 translocation and all this cool stuff to reload your muscle cells with glucose, if you're not giving them the nutrients then when the chances of a lot of it going into the muscle cell are really high, I don't know. You know, it just seems backwards to me. And, you know, so these last couple of years I've been a real nutrient timing, you know, I've been kind of insane about it, but I think it makes a huge difference. And I think if you set up the early part of your day the way you guys are talking about, I think it works magically for most people.
Oh, that's a really good point. I think so many people are so focused, like, oh, my God, I got to burn fat during a session. But you make a great point. What's the point? When you go to the gym, you're trying to gain muscle. Everything is focused towards that. The stimulus has got to be to gain size, to stimulate protein synthesis, and everything around that should be centered around that. And plus, if you are building muscle, you're enhancing your metabolism later on for the day as well. So, absolutely.
Yeah, amazing, man. John, what's exactly, I mean, if you're able to give some of your secrets, what exactly is your pre, during, and post-workout protocol like, as condensed as you can make it? Do you have something that you kind of follow on the whole for a lot of people, or is it variable?
Well, I think your nutrition and training should match. What I'm going to tell you is assuming that your training is intense and voluminous. You know, it's not a quick 20-minute workout. It's not a workout where you're doing a few sets and you're going home. I'm assuming some real intensity over a decent amount of time. We'll say, you know, an hour and 15 minutes. So the way I like to do it with people is I like to have a little food in them. And depending on how well they handle it determines how far out from training they eat the meal. So it might be 30 grams of protein. It might be 20 or 30 grams of carbs. And it might be 10 grams of fat. And what I like to do is I do like to add a little bit of fat so that I can control how quickly glucose is entering the bloodstream. What you don't want to have happen is for somebody to eat some carbs and then their pancreas dumps a bunch of insulin, and then they go hypo right when they start working out. So a small meal, just enough so they don't get hungry while they're training. Just kind of, you know, kind of get their blood sugar rising. And then while you train, and this has been this has been the most groundbreaking thing for me personally over the last 2 years. You know, I think this intro workout while you train, I think, is hugely undervalued. It's hugely undervalued. And I think part of it is because a lot of the supplements out there don't really do anything special. And I don't think intro workout nutrition is just awesome. No, it doesn't matter what you have. It has to be a certain type of nutrients. And I can just tell you the things that I found that I really like. Branch cyclic dextrins, which are Dr. Wilson probably knows better than me. I don't think they've been out any more than at least mainstream for maybe 4 or 5 years, but real low osmolality. They clear your bloodstream very quickly. They do their job and they get out. A protein that's broken down, that's where something like a casein hydrolysate that's really, really broken down into dien tripeptides, so that you don't want your stomach trying to digest something while you're training. You just want to put nutrients in there that, in my mind, drive insulin. And Dr. Wilson, you mentioned protein synthesis. I think this combination helps with protein synthesis, but it also, the other part of that puzzle, I think it reduces muscle protein breakdown. And I think insulin is kind of your best friend while you train in that respect. And then on the post-workout side of it, you know, you've just flooded your body's nutrition. So I'm not one of those guys that says, if you've done these things, you have to run off and get a protein shake. I just tell people, hey, look, relax, sit down, go home, cook a nice meal. Just cook a well-balanced meal, eat something that tastes good, you know, and you're good to go. Now, all those things can change if somebody doesn't have a pre-workout meal or they don't have an intro drink, whatever. But all things being equal, that's kind of the overview of what I like to do with people.
Yeah, I think that's great.
That's a ton of info, man. Thank you so much. Doc, what do you think about that, man? What's your I know you're training twice a day, pretty much every day, your machine. you got pre-workout rituals?
Honestly, it's a lot similar to John. Like, I'll have, I'll typically have branched-chain amino acids before I train. Because, like John says, you don't want something that's going to be hard on your gut. You want it easily digested. You just want to deliver nutrients. And so I have branched-chain amino acids and make sure I'm getting about 3 grams of leucine. Because leucine seems to be what drives protein synthesis. And then my carbs, depending on what time of day it is, you know, I'll probably have, the most I'll have is probably around 20 to 30 grams as well. And it's typically not super fast digesting, so it'd be more of the lower glycemic kind, because at one point that John points out here is what studies seem to show is that, let's say I'm going to train an hour from now, and I have, like, something really high glycemic, like just straight rice cakes or something with no fiber, my blood sugar will go up and it will draw. And I'll enter into the session actually hungry and a little delirious. I won't be able to focus on my weight. So that's why you tend to want to go with the more conservative approach, something lower glycemic, and the branched chain amino acids. I take HMB. I've done a lot of research with it and speeding recovery. And then during the actual workout, you know, if it's a really long workout, I might have branched-chain amino acids during. One thing that John points out is he talks about the dien tripeptides. That's really interesting because, guys, basically if you look at a hydrolyzed protein, essentially what that means is that the protein's sort of pre-digested. And if you look at your stomach and your small intestine, when you take up amino acids, you can take them up individually, or you can transport them in 2 to 3 to 4 amino acids at a time. If you actually have in your gut 2 to 3 amino acids that are linked together, they can be absorbed at once. That means they're going to be absorbed into your blood faster than an individual amino acid. So hydrolyzed protein sort of gives you that benefit, which is why I really like that recommendation. And if you did have really good pre and during workout nutrition, yeah, then you can go home and make a meal. If someone doesn't have good pre before and during workout nutrition, then the post-workout meal, they'll want to make sure they take care of that immediately. So are my thoughts overall.
And then one thing I've become a massive advocate of over the last couple of years is that intra-workout, like John says, I tend to make some bold statements sometimes, but I always, really believe them to some extent. Maybe it's a little over-exaggerated, but I always tell people, like, I actually probably wouldn't go in the gym at all if I didn't have BCAAs during my workout. It's almost one of those things like, it's not going to be as advantageous to even train today. You know, same thing with carbs and whatever happens to be. Obviously, it's dependent on, did I have a really good pre-workout meal and can I get to a good post-workout meal? But, like, really, if I'm trying to be optimal, which I'm trying to be the best in the world at what I do, I'm trying to be optimal. I mean, to go without BCAAs to me is almost silly. It's almost like just being negligent because I know it could, even if it makes me 2% better, it'd be silly of me to not do it. So that's kind of the way I approach it, man. It's like, that stuff is so important to me. And I only do carbs probably in my workouts 40% of the time, only on my high volume workouts or like leg day or back day or something, or workouts where I know when they're going to go over 45 or 50 minutes. Other than that, I'll usually take in carbs, obviously as soon as I'm done. But for me, that comes back to the limiting factor, the logic of the limiting factor, right? I know that my limiting factor is sometimes focus. So when I go in the gym, I've got so many extraneous things in my life that, things are popping in my brain. People are trying to talk to me. People are trying to get pictures and ask for advice and whatever it happens to be. So my limiting factor when I go in the gym is not necessarily a pump. It's not necessarily strength. It's focus. So for me to take in carbs pre-workout, I've found that it's actually eliminated or reduced my focus. For whatever reason, maybe it's just the increase in serotonin or it just makes me a little sleepy. I just find my brain doesn't focus as well when I have carbs. If I have a good serving of protein and fats, I find my focus to be better, and I find that I can get a little more intensity in that short workout. Whereas if I know the workout's going to be an hour, 15, hour and a half, then I'll definitely do carbs intra-workout, even sometimes at the beginning of the workout, or sometimes I'll wait to 30 minutes into the workout once I've already got a substantial amount of blood flowing, and then I'll put the carbs in there with the BCAAs to really try to flood the muscles at that point. I tend to be a little bold with some of my statements, but I mean, it's because I believe it. And I mean, obviously my experience or my goal is different than most people's.
Well,
I think that's perfect.
The thing that, I think the part where people struggle with this is on the intra-workout piece is they don't understand, and this is where I try to help, they'll say, well, okay, intra-workout during, so I'm just going to have a whey isolate or I'm just going to have some wax you made. But those ingredients that you use, dihydropeptides and something, carb with low osmolality, that is key. Now, I've tried a million other combinations, and I never, ever got the results. And here's the cool thing, Dr. Wilson. So what I notice with people, I work with several hundred people every year, and what I notice with these folks is when you get this right, they don't get sore anymore. It allows you to train with a little more frequency. And if you're getting in more workouts where you're training hard, you should theoretically improve at a faster pace. But I use recovery as my gauge on the dose I use with people. Because, honestly, the stuff's expensive. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. It's expensive. So what I do is I try to use a dose, the lowest dose I can, that gets the person to where they're not sore. When we've done that, they can train more, and that's where I think they have their best gain. So it's been a lot of trial and error, and I really follow closely to you guys, to Dr. Wilson and you and people like Brad Schoenfeld, because I'm always trying to learn, but I feel like I wish I had some more validity behind my practices, So.
Well, I think the soreness part, there's a lot of really good data on that. There's a ton of good data, basically, that having a high availability of amino acids during the workout, before a workout, does speed recovery of soreness. And you got guys like you and people who are aspiring to be like, you know, like John, like Ben, they're training their behinds off, you know, and let's face it, you know, the more you can get in the gym, the more frequently you can, the quicker you can recover, the quicker you can train that body part again. That's everything. And so just that soreness factor is essential. Essential.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast in itself right there. The idea of, you know, increasing your frequency, is that the way to go? We'll save that for another day. Getting back to the, you know, the discussion about cortisol really briefly, I think a lot of people, like Doug said, misunderstand the idea of cortisol. And the reason it gets a bad name is because it's the idea of most people in North America, probably around the world, have a constantly elevated level of cortisol. Cortisol is actually a really good thing, and it's actually a really strong fat burner if it's following its proper circadian rhythms and its proper cycles. And the problem with most people is their levels never go up or never go down. They're just constantly the same. So that's not advantageous. That's going to be really negative to your body's natural rhythm, just your kidneys, your, you know, your endocrine system. A good cortisol, like you'll get a great cortisol spike from a workout. And that's actually a good thing, because it triggers a whole hormonal cascade of recovery in your body. And people go, oh, I'm trying to avoid all cortisol. And that's something we want to point out you guys don't want to do. Cortisol has a lot of benefits. That's something, a mistake I've made in the past, and I've only really discovered this in the last maybe 2 or 3 years, is, you know, I used to always try to do everything I could to avoid cortisol, you know, carbs in the morning and carbs as soon as I could after the workout or during the workout, because you don't want to have a cortisol spike. And then you realize, hey, I'm not burning fat as optimally as I could. Why not? Well, this is probably one of the reasons, is you're kind of not regulating your cortisol is more important than stopping your cortisol. Any thoughts on that, guys?
Oh, that's a great point, Ben. You know, one of the things, I mean, all of us, no one who's been involved in, like, bodybuilding or strength training or powerlifting or weightlifting, no one has, at least not at some point in time, said, oh, my God, I got to avoid cortisol at all costs, you know, and myself included. And but one thing that Ben points out, and this is one thing I've learned from studying the research, is that it's not just the hormone, it's the pattern of how the hormone works. So if you're looking at cortisol and its normal circadian rhythm and how it responds acutely or short-term to a workout, those are positive benefits that are occurring. But what is the problem is exactly what Ben pointed out. If you take cortisol and it elevates and it remains elevated at a moderate level all the time, like we see in America, then you're going to have – that's where the problem occurs. And where that – is triggered is by chronically poor diet, chronically high level of stress, to where people stress out about everything. So it's a chronic elevated level of cortisol as fat. Short-term rises, normal circadian rhythms are very positive. If you were to inhibit that, you would not be able to get as lean as you need to get.
John, have you ever had any experience with cortisol around contests and you know, manipulating workouts, or any thoughts around that?
All right, so Ben, this was probably before your time, but you guys probably don't remember this. But back in the 90s, there was a hot drug that came out. It was called Cytadrin, and I don't know if you guys remember that or not, but its purpose was to block cortisol.
Yep,
and when it came out, I mean, everybody thought, oh, this is going to be the holy grail. We can block cortisol, and we can all just get massive, unlimited growth. but it's just funny you guys made me think of that, because in bodybuilding back in the 90s, I mean, that was very, especially at the national and elite levels, everybody was taking this stuff, Cytadrin. I don't even know if it's made anymore, but it's misguided thinking. It turned out that was actually better as an anti-aromatase, but that's a whole other story. When I think about cortisol, I think I like to try to reduce muscle protein breakdown, but I don't think you can really – I think when you train hard, you're going to get that inflammatory effect and that the cortisol. I think that's just going to happen. You don't stop it. So I don't even really worry about it. And honestly, just like you guys are saying, I don't even really think about it during other parts of the day either. My experience has been these constant low-grade levels of elevation that Dr. Wilson's talking about causes a shitload of health problems, high blood pressure. And if I'm not mistaken, maybe Dr. Wilson probably knows this pathway better than me, but I think it also causes a degree of insulin resistance after a while too.
Certainly, I totally agree.
Yeah, certainly though, I mean, there's just a number of health problems with when you have, you know, this, you're in this constant low-grade fight or flight stress that people are nowadays. This might sound silly, but I think one of the best things that we could do is we could all just take a half-hour nap every day at lunch. It's amazing how much better you feel, how much more relaxed you are, how much less tired you are in the afternoon. And I try to tell people, if you have the opportunity to take a little half-hour nap, just reduce stress, and I have all these these emotional philosophies I don't want to bore you guys with and put you to sleep, but controlling stress, I think, is a pretty big deal, but going overboard on this controlling of cortisol, I think it's kind of silly. I would agree with you guys on that.
Yeah, one thing you're I kind of pride myself in is avoiding stressful people. You know, I mean, that's why I surround myself with the likes of you gentlemen, is I don't want people who are going to be bringing drama and stress to my life. Like, I'm Mr. Anti-Stress, Mr. Anti-Drama. I just want everything to be chilled. I want everything to be relaxed. There's no point in being stressed about literally anything. I mean, I could think of maybe two things in my life that may bring me some stress, and the rest of that is just like, well, you know, get your work done, work hard, and life is going to happen as it will, and you'll develop good things on your own, and surround yourself with smart people and people that are smarter than yourself doing great things, and ultimately, it stresses all perception, and I think that's the biggest problem in society today is people are trying to get from point A to point B so fast. You know, they're getting road rage, they're getting angry, they're getting stressed out, they're not getting their meal, or they're late for their workout, or they're late for their call, or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, it's still going to be there when you get there. You know, that's always my perception is, you know, there's no point in getting stressed about stuff.
I
worked in a corporate environment for 12 years, and in 2005, I think you know my story, I got really sick. Dr. Wilson, I had a vascular disease that and my large intestine almost killed me. And when I came out of that sickness, I had a different perspective. I went back to my job at the bank, and all of those things that seemed like big deals weren't such a big deal to me anymore. And sometimes it's just perspective. You know, I traveled to Honduras back when I was 20 years old, third world country. And when I came back from Honduras, I had a new appreciation for what I have here. And, you know, sometimes those kinds of things happen to you and it really puts things in perspective. But, you know, those are the kinds of things I think, you know, you mentioned people too. I call those people life suckers, Ben. And
yeah.
I tell people this all the time, stay away from life suckers. You know, that was one of the things I really had to focus on in a corporate environment. You know, people want to complain about how so-and-so is this, so-and-so is that. I'm like, I didn't want to get near those people because they just bring you down. You don't want life suckers. And there's a lot of people out there like that. And I actually wrote about avoiding life suckers. I think there's some good lessons for all of us in there.
Absolutely. No question about it. Everything you guys said is tremendous.
I always talk about bad relationships, especially, and I always joke about my girlfriend. Basically for the first 6 months that I dated anybody, like, you're going through the ringer, man. I'm making sure that, like, you have the same perception towards stress as I do. I'm trying to push buttons in every way to make you crack and make you get angry and stressed out. And once you pass the 6 month test, then, you know, then you're in. But until then, like, literally every test under the sun, because I just never want to involve dramatic people into my life. So. I was very lucky to find a wonderful lady who, has the same perceptions towards stress as I do. And I think that's the worst thing for most people is toxic relationships. That's a whole other podcast in itself, though, I guess.
It really is. Like, honestly, the psychology of bodybuilding and the psychology of powerlifting could be several podcasts. And it's
yeah, and that might be something we do down the road, maybe a psychologist or something. That'd be kind of cool. So, Doc, any other ways that you suggest people optimize their breakfast? How about some supplement suggestions around breakfast time? You know, I have my kind of morning supplement ritual. What do you suggest to get your day going and, you know, get you fired up?
Well, typically, I definitely recommend, like you guys point out, the MCT oils are really good. I think if you're programming, if you're thinking about nutrient programming, I think that the concept is going to apply to basically everything. So I think having most of your anabolic sort of supplements in the morning works. So waking up also and having like things like fish oil is going to be really good with breakfast. I have my HMB in the morning as well because HMB has been shown to actually increase the rate of fat metabolism and fat burning in mitochondria, our fat burning machinery. Those are the main things that I have. I'm mainly mostly everything that is anabolic, even like my creatine I'll have in the morning as well. But that's basically, those are the main things that I have, HMB, creatine, fish oil, and a lot of times NCTs.
Awesome. How about yourself, John?
Well, I typically do fish oil, CoQ10 I like to take, especially since it's a fat-heavy breakfast, fat solubility factor there. What else do I take? I like to take a baby aspirin, but that doesn't really have to be in the morning. That could be any time. The other thing that I think I started talking about this 3 or 4 years ago is sometimes I have the juice from one lemon, and I like to have some lemon water. And I'm doing that for liver support. You know, the D-limonene and all the pathways there. But I think that's also a good thing to start your day. What else? I think that's about it. You know, I tend to not do a ton of supplements. Just the stuff during training, and then probably just a couple that I mentioned. But I think that about covers it for me.
For me, I'm a big advocate of L-carnitine. I figured one of you guys would mention that. But I'm a huge L-carnitine guy with a high-fat breakfast. Same thing, obviously, fish oil. We're all going to be doing fish oil. I do my vitamin D. And I actually found, depending on what time of the day I'm training often, tyrosine. L-tyrosine for me works wonders. As far as energy and not having to use a stimulant, this world seems to be so caught up in using, you know, caffeine or pre-workouts or, you know, fat burners, et cetera. You know, I do my best to avoid those things all the time. You know, sometimes I'll enjoy a cup of coffee because I enjoy it. Or, you know, sometimes I'll have a pre-workout if it's going to be a leg day or something. But tyrosine for me is such a great energy supplement. I literally feel like I'm, you know, I had 3 cups of coffee. And that combined with carnitine for me is wonderful.
I'm going to have to try that combo.
Ben. Oh, it's great, awesome. Man. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Ben, there's a supplement that I use called Brain Candy that is actually acetyl-L-carnitine, tyrosine, and either caffeine or non-caffeine, depending on which kind you get. But
yep.
Those little suckers are great, man. Those little things are cool. It's in this little, like, 5-hour energy bottle. And, I do drink those too, that was good that you mentioned that, and also vitamin D. You mentioned that. That's another one. I did forget that one, and I think vitamin D is something that probably a large majority of us that don't live in a tropical climate, we're probably a little short of on our. If we go to the doctor and do the 25 OHD test, we'd all probably be a little low on it. I know mine's always pretty low, but. That's good to take with fat too, you know, fat soluble vitamins. So that's a good point as well.
Well, I think that wraps us up, boys. Unless there's anything else you guys want to add in you know what? One thing I'm going to add, because I know we're going to get 1,000 questions about this, John, is why do you take a baby aspirin?
Well, really that and fish oil, part of the reasoning is management of hematocrit, just keeping your blood a little bit thinner. And you can actually tell too. It's pretty funny. You get a little cut or something, and blood that has a different kind of texture to it, but really just kind of managing the viscosity of your blood. Fish oil has been, in fact, if you take too much fish oil, you can bruise too easily. It can kind of, it can work against you.
Right.
but that's the reason.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I knew if you didn't say that, we'd probably get a zillion questions about it. So I figured we might as well throw it in there.
Yeah.
Dr. Wilson, anything you want to add, buddy?
No, guys, it was great discussing this information with you. I actually learned a lot. So I'm pumped up, man. Good stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have to keep these things to an hour. Otherwise, I think most people may tune out. So, but we're definitely going to have you back really soon because you're just, like as I said in the intro of the call, you're a wealth of information, literally my encyclopedia. When I don't know something, I literally just text off, and within 5 minutes, I have my world-class response, which I'm so grateful for. Well, it's true, right?
Man.
Oh, man, you're the best.
Hey, Dr. Wilson, it was great talking to you, man. Thanks
great
for talking
to you. Absolutely, man. Anytime, I'm looking forward to more.
All right, so we're looking forward to next week, and thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Dr. Wilson, Mr. Meadows, you guys are awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook/ IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter @ IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPakulski.com.